The Low Post is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective, my buddies. They post episodes on Tuesdays and Friday mornings, bright and early. The NBA playoffs are coming. You may have heard that, so be sure to check it out. You can follow Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective, as well as The Low Post, wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast on a Tuesday afternoon, where we are about 2.5 hours away from the NBA's first real non-bubble play-in tournament tipping off between the Charlotte Hornets and the Indiana Pacers. But we all know the headliner is tomorrow in Los Angeles, where one team with legitimate championship aspirations, the defending champions, in fact, is taking on a team with one of the people in the running for MVP and a former dynasty in the mega play-in game between the Lakers and the Warriors. And calling that on the scene in Los Angeles, the best in the business, one of the great coaches in basketball for Team USA right now and many other places, Jeff Van Gundy, how are you?
Doing fine. Looking forward to the game tomorrow.
Yeah, so how, like, you're in LA, you're going to be at the game. There's going to be X amount of fans. I don't know how many they have. How does, like, does it feel like this is an unusual game? Like, does it feel like a finals game? Does it feel like a regular season game? Do you feel like a sense of like, this is new or no?
Yeah. I think I'm going to be interested. I think so much depends on the crowd. Right. And I think it's one of the undersold things, like the advantages some teams may have with more home court advantage, other teams much less. So I think, there's very few fans going to be there tomorrow. I think 4,000, I think they're saying. But I just think the Lakers are too good defensively not to win, one of these two games. I'm just interested. I'm just interested in what it feels like. I'm not a huge fan of the play-in. I love the play-in from the bubble. I like that format better, but it's here. Anytime there's elimination, and tomorrow's obviously not elimination, but when you have elimination closing in, hopefully the play goes up, the urgency goes up, the intensity goes up, and hopefully the competition is great tomorrow.
It feels – I just wonder what it's going to look like and sound like and feel like, because it's not game 7 of the finals, but it has a lot of pressure on it. It should be more than like a – game 3 of a blah first round series. It should be like, I wonder if, is LeBron going to play 46 minutes if they needed him to, or are they going to treat it that way? I'm just very curious about all this stuff.
Well, I would think, yeah, you would play absolutely as many minutes as you need to win. I think, you've seen Curry go up in his minutes, to in the 40s. I mean, I would think you would play as like it is an elimination game. The problem with that, obviously, is a team that doesn't win has to play, 48 hours later in truly what is an elimination game. So, but I think both teams will have each other's attention for sure. And they know how dangerous each team is. I would think you'd play your guys elongated minutes. Now, what that means for James, how long he can really go right now after being off that long, I don't know.
Let's talk about the matchup. Strangely, in very broad terms, similar teams in that the Lakers actually finished 24th on offense and first on defense. End of the season, first on defense, which is really an incredible accomplishment for their whole team and their coaching staff, considering how much time LeBron and Anthony Davis missed. The Warriors are 20th on offense and fifth on defense. And we think of these players and their high powered scoring and what we've seen from Curry over the years. And these are really defense first teams. And yet those numbers, you almost throw them out the window to some degree, because when LeBron and Anthony Davis are on the floor, they have a very good offense and they're plus 11 points per 100 possessions. And here's the number that's really interesting to me. With Steph and Draymond on the floor and no Wiseman, and I'm not doing this to pick on Wiseman, I'm just saying this is a thing. The Warriors for the season are plus 11.5 per 100 possessions. That is an elite figure. And I bring it up because I think we have this conception that the Warriors have found this groove, and it's like Curry, and they're just kind of making it work with these cute guys. Like Wiggins is all right. Juan Toscano-Anderson, he's doing stuff. And like, they just profile is a really good team the way they're playing now. And that's not an indictment of Wiseman. It's just without him. And by the way, most rookie big men are not productive players. Without him, they can play a style that is more familiar to how they played when they were winning championships. They're just a good team. And the last thing I'll wrap before I go to you is the Lakers won the season series 2-1, plus 55 scoring margin for the Lakers in those three games combined. Wiseman in this series was minus 51 by himself. So I just think the Warriors are a different team. The Lakers are going to be a different team. I think it could be a really fun game. What's the sort of, I don't know if it's an X's and O's thing or a big picture matchup thing. Like what is your eye going to be on those first couple possessions?
Well, I think, you know, the whole idea of, you know, I don't think Steph Curry can be guarded. Like the way he plays, the movement off the ball, it's not the pick and roll defense. It's what he does after he moves it, right? And I think what teams do oftentimes is they overreact to his scoring. He still finds a way to 30 to 35 to 40 points, and other guys get layups. So the first thing I would think of if I was the Lakers is I wouldn't think as much about how I was going to guard Steph Curry. I would think how am I going to guard to prevent layups, and how am I going to guard Draymond Green? What do I want to do with Draymond Green? Both when he catches the ball beyond the three-point line as a pseudo point guard at the high post, and how do I want to guard him when he catches in the low post, which we know he's not trying to score, right? So both areas are where he's trying to make a scoring pass, either to Curry or to somebody off of a mistake that leads to a layup. And so I'm interested in how they guard Green. And then secondarily at the other end with Davis and Drummond, I would think a lot about how do I expose Drummond's lack of shooting to make it harder for Green? You might bring out the old front and back, which we haven't seen since teams don't post and they don't, you know, but that like the after free throw play where they always post Davis. If Drummond's in the game, forget that. I'm going to be in front of Davis and behind Davis with Drummond's man. So those are the things that I'm interested in. And really, who do the Lakers play at the center position? Do they go back to playing some Davis there? Do they play Harold? Do they play Gasol? You know, are they all in on Drummond? You know, I think that position isn't as good as it was last year for the Lakers.
I think you nailed some of the big issues. So I'm assuming they will start Drummond just because that's what they've been doing. In which case, Anthony Davis will probably guard Draymond Green, which he can do a lot of things from there. I mean, he can blitz Curry. He can come up to the level of the screen when they run pick and roll, and you don't worry about him getting exposed in those situations. But the Warriors, when they take out Looney, they're really, really dynamic. Like these lineup, like Kent Bazemore is shooting well from three. Juan Toscano-Anderson is just a good basketball player. He's a good passer. He's a good cutter. Like they get really, really dynamic, and that will be tough for Drummond. It'll be tough for Gasol. It'll be tough for Harrell. And I do think we'll see some Davis at five in the game. If not, it may be even heavy chunks of Davis at five. But then part of the Lakers' advantage is I'm interested to see those Drummond minutes are going to be so interesting because the Lakers are a really good offensive rebounding team when they're big. The Warriors are a bad defensive rebounding team. The Lakers are a big free throw team, and the Warriors foul to the second most of all teams. So there is a path where the Lakers, like when Drummond is in the game, can they, for those minutes, can they just bludgeon them when Looney is in the game and not get exposed defensively because Looney's also in the game? Can they bludgeon them and sort of play that smash mouth style? But I agree with you. I think Davis at five it's a look we haven't seen this year. We know it's their trump card. And I think it makes a lot of sense when the Warriors take Looney off the floor.
Yeah. I'm going to be interested in what Steve decides to do and how many minutes he feels he needs to get from Looney. I think you could make a case for matching Looney's minutes, not with Drummond, though. I could see you making a case for Looney's minutes going to Gasol and trying to make them guard Draymond Green with Drummond, you know, and putting, you know, Davis on somebody else. And then, you know, Green still guards Davis. I would not be, you know, Drummond's a historically great rebounder. I think people overlook that, like historically great. But at the same time, you're operating in a one game scenario. Can you make the Lakers blink first? And I think it's going to be so interesting how the game is played out and where Davis plays and with who.
The Lakers also, to their credit, guarded Curry well in the three games. He only averaged 23 a game on 42% shooting, 35% from three. Schroeder is pretty good. Now, Schroeder just came back from health and safety protocols, looked decent in his return. He's pretty good at sort of skittering around picks and doing all the stuff you need to do to be a reasonable. I mean, no, as you said, Curry's unguardable, but you're just looking for how do I minimize the pain? How do I minimize the mistakes? How do I minimize the number of times he catches with an open window? He's pretty good at that. Caruso's pretty good at it. He played the last game. Wes Matthews is not built for that, but I do think it's potentially important for the Lakers that Wes Matthews found his footing in the last couple of weeks of the season, because he could be an important player for them. And that's why this game is so important to me. Like, I think you can tell me if you disagree. I think the Warriors are a good team that if they got into the real playoffs could win a round in the right matchup. Though I think Utah would be a tough matchup for them. If that's what it ended up being, Phoenix, we'll see. And probably go out after that. I don't know. We'll see how the matchups work. The Lakers obviously are trying to win the championship and are such a huge threat that half the league was tanking on the last day of the season to avoid playing them. And not only that, everyone's focused on LeBron and how healthy LeBron is and AD and how healthy AD is. Look, AD looks pretty good. LeBron, nobody knows his body better than LeBron. And no coach in the postseason field knows LeBron and knows how LeBron knows his body better than Ty Lue. And Ty Lue's team did everything they could to duck LeBron in the first round. That tells me that I don't think anybody should be super excited about playing the Lakers now versus playing the Lakers later. And then you bet Caruso's back, Wes is back, Schroeder's back. Like, there's a universe where the Lakers are rounding into form almost at the right time. And if they somehow lose this game and are on the brink of elimination, my God, would that be great theater? This whole thing is going to be great theater.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
The Low Post fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite The Low Post episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like First Take and Pardon the Interruption ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/low. That's amazon.com/low to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, going back to the Curry and the matchups, I think what the Lakers accomplished defensively this year was tremendous. And Frank Vogel's not one to pat himself on the back, but he did, I thought, a remarkable job holding it all together in really hard times. So I think Schroeder is He can chase Curry. Like you said, Caruso, Caldwell Pope. I think they have some guys that it's you never have the advantage over Curry, but you have guys who are disciplined and they're big. You know, like they've got a big team to make it harder where they're not reckless, that they're disciplined defensively. Now, the regular season doesn't mean anything, though. That, like, one thing that I learned early in my NBA career, summer league has nothing to do with regular season. Regular season has nothing to do with the playoffs, and the playoffs have nothing to do with what's happening in the finals, right? So it's like all those things, every time you go up a level, like, don't try to draw off of – you got to think about how – you want to guard people, how you want to score. But if you guarded somebody well in the, or you defended them well as a group in the regular season, that doesn't mean there's going to be carryover to the playoffs. So I think we all have to be careful about how much we try to extrapolate from regular season games. Curry averaged 23 on, what did you say, 42%. Guess what? Frank Vogel is in his office right now banging his head into the wall thinking about everything that could go wrong tomorrow trying to guard this guy, even if they do it well, because that's how dangerous Curry is. He can beat good defense.
Oh, I mean, look, the last time we saw him on the playoff stage, he almost beat the Raptors, like, kind of not by himself because Draymond was still there, but he, you know, people forget that game six in Golden State was down to the wire. And I can tell you for sure, everybody in Toronto was absolutely petrified about facing that team in a game seven in the finals. Curry is that good. We're talking a lot about Curry and the Warriors offense and the Lakers defense, and I agree with you. It's really for the Lakers to finish number one in defense. Like, I'm not even really sure how that happened because by consensus, by far their two best defenders were guys that were injured for huge chunks of the season. And here they are at number one. And their other players are all just good defenders. They play really hard. And Frank Vogel, from day one, he walked in there and said, we're being a defense-first team. That's it. And a lot of coaches say that, and it doesn't take – I don't know what happened there. I mean, when you have your two best players buy in, that I guess that's all that needs to happen. Everybody else buys in. But I think it's – I think we all get accused of sort of over-Lakering it in the media, especially now with LeBron there. I actually don't think enough has been made of how amazing it is that they finished with the number one defense in the league.
Well, I think a couple things on that. I think you're right. It starts with the commitment of the best players, knowing how you're going to win. But they've done, and I don't think Rob Pelinka has gotten nearly enough credit for putting pieces around their best players that fit in to the vision of Frank Vogel. So, right, Caruso, Wes Matthews, Morris is tough, even though he doesn't play a lot. Gasol has slowed down considerably, but smart and tough and big. So I think they've done that. And then they are experienced and they're big. Like, they are big. And I think sometimes we think small ball instead of versatility ball. Like small does not win playoff series or playoff, you know, the whole thing. Versatility with size, now that wins. It gives you a chance to win. And so, like, to me, that's what they've done exceptionally well. I think their roster fits the vision of their coach. The coach does a great job in implementing a system. But it's not really scheme. I mean, scheme's important, but commitment is more important. To me, he's drawn out of them the commitment that they have, because – listen, no matter what we want to say, I know we always throw numbers around now. This guy is the first guy to average 40 and 10 and 20 and 30 in a 30-day period. I mean, I hate all these stats we bring up now. But, like, the thing that we all know is defense gives you an opportunity to win in the playoffs.
Let me ask you about that. Let me ask you about that.
But you can win. You gotta guard to win.
Windhorst had a piece about this today. I don't know if you saw it on ESPN.
About how
this has been a record-breaking offensive season, and this debate within the league sort of crystallized around Brooklyn of, well, it does, you know, traditionally in the playoffs, offense goes down a little bit, pace goes down a little bit, defense becomes a little bit more of the focus of, you know, how you win. And there's this debate, like, is that even still the case? It's not quite asking the question, does defense still matter? Everyone agrees it matters. I do think it's asking the question, does defense matter as much, or are these offenses just so good and so empowered by the rules that defense is in fact less important now than offense? What did you think of that piece? Where are you on that? Like, how is the game changed in that regard, if at all?
Yeah, no, see, I don't think it's changed. I think the game has changed, but I think Spoelstra, I think, had a quote in there. It's relative, but defense is still, you know, is important. I mean, so how you view defense, like, you know, the high scoring, you know, if you're number one in defense, you're probably giving up a ton more efficiency than 10 years ago. You might've been last with the same number, but it's all relative to who you play. So, you know, defense is extremely important. How you play it scheme wise, like, I think you do have to have versatility. I think you have to have size that can do different things. And I know in today's game, more than ever before, dumb and inexperienced get you beat. So you cannot trot out a dumb team at either end. Like, you have to be able to make decisions as the game is going fast, and you've got to adapt and adjust individually and as a team. And I'm not talking coaching adjustments. I'm talking just because you know what's going on, like how you're getting hurt, who's hurting you, what you got to change, you know, before you have to take a timeout.
I do think the Lakers being a veteran smart team is important in this matchup, particularly because the Warriors get a lot of good looks because they play differently than other teams, and inexperienced teams with less of a defensive identity and IQ just don't know how to defend those split actions, the crisscrossing, it seems random. There's no pattern to it. The Lakers are going to be mostly the Warriors are going to have to work harder to get open on those plays. The Lakers aren't just going to give them mistakes. Yeah, I don't even think a Brooklyn championship this year, like, let's say Brooklyn, it ranks 8th in defense among playoff teams or 10th in defense among playoff teams. That seems, you know, like average-ish, and wins the championship because they have an elite offense. That doesn't like invalidate the importance of defense to me, if that's indeed what happens. It shows that even a team like that with those three guys, the third best player on the team just finished 50-40-90 for the season. With those three guys, even they are going to have to hit a baseline of defensive competency to win the title. Like, I don't think they can be last in defense and win the title. I think they know that. I think they know they have to rebound. They know they have to play defense. Even that team with that level of skill is not going to be able to half-ass on defense or be terrible on defense and win the championship. Or if they are, then they're just that good offensively. I don't know.
Yeah, I think two things. A, I don't think they're that bad defensively.
Haven't been the last month or two.
I think they've done a competent job. Like, and I'm interested in who they play as well in the playoffs. So I think around those three guys, you know, are they going to play DeAndre Jordan or Blake Griffin or Claxton and how? And I think what they've built in, because they played, they're not constrained starting lineup wise. Like, to me, they're going to start four guys. They're three guys and Joe Harris. And the fifth guy is going to be up in the air. And because they've done it all year, it's not going to be a shock to anybody if somebody goes from starter to not playing. I think that's interesting. I think I've really been intrigued by what Steve Nash has done there. But I don't think they're going to be 16th in defense and win the championship. I don't. I think you're going to see a team that's historically good on offense. And they're, like you said, they don't have to be great. They have to be competent. And I think because they're experienced, they will play competent defense.
Obviously, Bruce Brown's gotten a lot of attention. Claxton. So I was looking up my defensive player of the year research. They, you know, all this, I know this fancy tracking data we have measures you know, when a defender is contesting a shot or is the closest to the guy shooting, how much do those offensive players underperform their what we would expect they would shoot based on where the shot is, who the players. Claxton was number one on the list among like biggest negative differentials. I don't know if that means anything, but it matches certainly what I've seen. And I also think the unsung, I mean, he's not unsung in Brooklyn, but Jeff Green has been sensational for them on both ends of the floor, has been absolutely sensational. And what an interesting career arc for him to be sort of overhyped, probably the wrong word, but you know, there was a moment where it's like, is he going to be part of the big three or whatever in Oklahoma City? Goes to Boston, has the heart condition, is kind of lost in the wilderness, started to rebuild himself a little bit on that Cavs team that made the finals. He's just become a absolutely perfect role player at the end of his career. It's really, he's got a really interesting NBA story.
He really does, the longevity. And also it just shows you, if somehow through all the selfishness that we promote in the league, right? If you can stay unselfish and you can give to your team and your teammates and play a style that is for your team, you have a chance to always play pretty good basketball. And like Jeff Green, like, was he overdrafted as five? I think his career would tell you yes, right? You're hoping for a star there. Did he turn out to be a star? No. Do you think Brooklyn cares? No. Like, they have a really good complement because he knows how to play basketball. He knows how to guard in this league. He knows how to pass. He can handle, he can cut, he makes enough shots. And I think, you know, that's where Blake Griffin, he's undervalued right now because, you know, he's not what he once was. But I'll tell you what, he can pass, he can shoot, he'll step in front of people and take charges, and he gives you versatility. So I think Sean Marks has done a remarkable job. Obviously, assembling the big three that they have is, like, amazing. But he's also done a really good job of putting, you know, good complementary players around his better three players.
Let's get back to this game because I just couldn't be hyped enough for this game. It's just it's so fitting that the biggest play-in game in this first year where everyone's sort of like, this is a thing, is LeBron and Steph, because so much of the last 10 to whatever years of NBA history involves those guys going head to head on the biggest stage. And here they are again.
Can I interrupt you right there for one sec though? Can you imagine everybody who's for the play-in game? If one of those two happens to get eliminated, you're going to see a turn. Like, what a stupid idea. The TV partners in particular, because they will just lose ratings out the wazoo. So I'm just saying.
Well, you know what, though? I've said this before. I just – let's say the Lakers go out. Like, I think the Warriors going out, the TV partners, we both have to raise our hand for that. The TV partners would probably not be psyched about that, but I don't think there's an expectation that the Warriors, there wasn't even necessarily expectation that the Warriors would make the playoffs. If the Lakers go out, you're absolutely right that there will be a turning on the play-in. And my thing is, I think the NBA has to be prepared for that and hold steady, because if you let that get you off this idea, which I think is a good idea. Now, you and I may disagree on the play, and I think the play is a no-brainer. I love it. We do. Okay. If you are so weak that the Lakers failing to make the playoffs and the backlash from that makes you moonwalk away from the idea, then you never cared about the idea in the first place. You have to let it, you have to have some staying power. It reminds me of, like, well, we have to make the playoffs or the coach is getting fired. Oh, we missed by a tiebreaker because of a buzzer shot. And that's the difference between the coach is really good and we want to keep him and the coach stinks and we want to fire him. You either like the idea or you don't. And I think the Lakers are going to win tomorrow. And so this will all be moot. But that's just my spiel.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the hell I was saying now.
No. I'm just saying, like, I agree with you. I did like the idea that you could play yourself out of the play-in by beating a team by so many games like they had last year in the play-in.
Agreed. I wish there was a way to make that a real part of
value
it.
To the regular season more.
But that wouldn't apply this year, I don't. It wouldn't apply. All these teams are in play-in range. There's no Dallas. Yeah. Like last year, Dallas was 7 by a million games over 8.
Yeah, I just, you know, and no one really cares about this. I just, having gone through it, like you work, you're involved. You get not. I'm not saying the people covering it, the fans, the league, they don't know what it's like to play this year 72 or 82 games and qualify by one or two games, right? I know the league doesn't care. The fans don't care about equality. I, having lived it, I do. And that's why I, you know, the wild card worked out great in baseball. This will probably work out well from a fan basis. Like, I think the interest is high. I do. So why not extend it to the sixth and fifth seeds as well?
Oh boy.
Why not? Let's say if you don't have home court, we're going to create interest. Now we're going to have what? I don't know. 12 teams.
You know, one issue you and I are aligned on, and I sometimes feel like we're the only two voices screaming from the wilderness about this, and I'm never going to stop screaming and you're not either, is that we just got to get rid of the transition clothesline Euro foul, whatever you want to call it. I don't care if I sound like an old man yelling at a cloud. I'm not stopping until they get rid of it.
I just don't understand why we want it in the game. We want transition baskets. We have what I think is a silly rule, the clear path rule, right? I think it's silly.
Nobody understands. They change it every 3 years. Nobody understands it. And the rest, the announcers don't understand it.
So if he's a little bit ahead of me, if you take the foul, not only do you get to shoot 2 free throws, you also get the ball out, all right? But 6 inches behind that, I can take the foul. You don't get any free throws. And you just get the ball out unless you're in the penalty. Like, It's so disparate, the penalties. It makes no sense. And here's the thing. In Europe, they've eliminated the take foul.
The Euro foul. In Europe, they eliminated the Euro foul.
They invented it, and they hate it. And like, to me, it goes back to what used to be called intentional fouls in college. And, like, well, we want to take decision-making out of the referee's hands. If you want to take decision-making out of the referee's hands, you got the wrong officials. Get rid of them. Find guys that can make decisions. That'd be like saying, I want to take decision-making out of the point guard's hands or the quarterback's hands in football. No, are you kidding me? So you know what's an intentional foul, and it should be penalized like the clear path rule. And I cannot for the life of me, understand why the NBA wants that play in our game.
I keep hearing, well, we're discussing it on the competition committee. But can I be in the discussion? What is that discussion like? Do we need a PowerPoint presentation about how much this sucks? Like, I don't, like, what is the discussion? I don't understand.
I have no idea how long that discussion would take. Hello, who wants to nominate that's a stupid play that we want to eliminate? All hands should go up. Like it's automatic. I don't get it. It's not good basketball. When fouling becomes some like strategy, like that's why I hate the foul, like away from the ball. Like I want to get intentional fouling out of the game. Now, can you be smart and still foul? Yes. I love smart play. I don't just love grabbing a guy and saying that's a smart play.
End of rant. I want you every time it happens in one of your games to yell about it, because I just, the NBA hears you. They hear me, but not as much as they hear you, and they care. And I you need to shame them into getting rid of this. Okay.
I wish I had that power. Yeah.
Lakers Warriors. We've talked a lot about Steph with the ball, about the importance of Draymond as a scorer. You know, because I do think the Lakers will just say anybody but Steph, right? So Draymond's going to have to get you 11. Bazemore is going to have to get some threes. Whatever, Wiggins may have to hit some straight jumper. I mean, Wiggins has been playing really well the last 20 or 30 games. What are you looking for when the Lakers have the ball? You mentioned the sort of, not the spacing issues, but just the sort of double post-up thing they have going on when AD and Drummond are in the game. But what else are you looking for when the Lakers have the ball?
Well, if to start the game, if I'm playing Anthony Davis and he faces up, like, you know, in that, like, off the block, face up, where his length, you know, I'm not letting him play in that game. I'm going to come and get him. I don't necessarily think the Lakers are a great shooting team. Obviously, again, that exposes you to more rotations and offensive rebounds. But like when you're in this type of situation and you're, you know, playing one game, like, I think you have to play the percentages. And to me, the percentages are, I can't have Draymond Green in foul trouble and I can't have Anthony Davis going off. So I am going to, like, early, I'm going to protect Draymond Green from himself, from fouls, and I'm trying to get the ball out of Davis's hands. And plus, I think, you know, the Lakers, a lot of their guys haven't played a lot lately. Schroeder, James, Caruso. Could they three ball me to a loss? Absolutely. The more likely scenario is they bludgeon me with their size to a win. So I'm interested in what Steve decides to do, how he decides to play Davis. You know, James, there's really no, you know, you're just playing him. It's not like there's a strategy. You just got to play him. And I think Wiggins, and you mentioned this, Wiggins, when he was in Minnesota as their third best player behind Butler and Towns, he was pretty good. Here, he's their third best player. Next year, he'll be their fourth best player. He'll be even better. So I've been, again, you can't judge Wiggins through the lens of being the number one pick. Judge him for actually how he's playing, and he's improved his shooting. He's going to have to come up with a good game tomorrow. Like you said, it can't be a 15-point game. He's going to have to probably get, you know, north of 22, 23. And can he do it? Absolutely.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them, you name it. They won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because of the eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You know, I watched that Pacers-Lakers game the other day when they had everybody for the first time. And you started to see the vision with Drummond for really the first time. LeBron ran a bunch of spread pick and roll with Drummond and AD spotting up. And yeah, you don't want AD to just be a spot up guy, but they got good looks every time because Drummond rolling to the rim is still a threat if LeBron is dribbling with him, and they got open threes out of it. So I'll be interested in that. And just part of the reason why in a one game scenario, it's just hard to pick against LeBron is because, you know, he's going to slow the pace and he's going to just sort of take control of the game and be chess master. And it's been a while. It's going to be nostalgic when LeBron calls up Steph's man for a pick and forces Steph into a pick and roll situation where he's got a hedge or switch. And if it's a switch, it's an emergency. Like, we saw that for four finals in a row. We get to see it again on a big stage. How are the Warriors going to handle that? And then to me, the ultimate test of, like, is LeBron concerned is when he starts posting up. And I'll never forget. Remember that year? I think it was 2018. Where Indiana took them to seven games. And it, like, was not a very good Pacers team. It shouldn't have been a seven-game series. In game seven, LeBron finally was like, I'm posting up every single time because these guys can't do anything to me. And Wiggins, whoever you put on him, other than Draymond Green, and we'll see how much we see that matchup, he can play bully ball against all of those guys. And I'm interested to see if he feels threatened enough to do it and when.
I mean, you make a good point. Like he's, I know this, you can't give great players everything. So you can't let them score 30 and then get, you know, 10 assists. Like they, I think the Warriors have to make their choice first on the spread pick and roll. Obviously you can't let James shoot layups and you can't let Drummond dunk it. Right. So if you're going to get beat, you can't be caught halfway. Like that ball sprays out to Anthony Davis or Caruso or, hey, and that beats you, so be it. But you've got to take away the basket. It's the same way with James posting up. When he gets to a certain depth, you can't just sit there and say, hey, Wiggins, hold your ground. The guy is what, like 260?
Wiggins will be in the basket.
Right. At a certain time, and you don't want James to be able to pick you apart with his passing. I understand that. But there are some situations when he's backing you down that you just have no choice. I mean, remember when Love and Kyrie Irving were hurt and he posted like 99 times a game in game two when they beat the Warriors to even it up? I mean,
they went up 2-1 in that series just playing LeBron completely controlling the pace and
caught it and just, you know, back in. And they had some 3-point shooting around him. Right. But,
and offensive rebounding, that was the other thing. If he misses, we're sending Mozgov and Tristan Thompson to the boards.
Always good when a Mozgov could be thrown into a podcast, but you're right about the offensive rebounding. You know, when every time you double, you know, you're exposing yourself to threes, drives off of rotation, second shots. But when if he backs in, at some point you have to come. You just have to.
Are you going to pick a winner? I'm picking the Lakers to win. Are you willing to pick a winner? Do you not want to pick a winner?
I don't pick winners, but like I would be shocked if the Lakers didn't win. Okay. I mean, if they're whole and healthy, they're dangerous. I love the year Steph Curry and the Warriors have had. I think it's been – it inspires me to see a guy move, be in A, great condition, and B, be willing to play in a different manner. Our league is so predictable now in the, you know, pick and rolls, five out. This guy just passes, moves. And they – you mentioned it. Juan Toscano, like he knows how to play basketball. Like – they screen for him. And I love the development of Poole. Like Poole, isn't it? Like, obviously he's not as good as Curry, but he plays now similarly. You have to have somebody who's willing to move without the ball to have a good chance against the size that the Lakers bring. I mean, you can't play stationary basketball against the Lakers. You've got to move their size. And so I'm just so impressed with what Curry's done. I know everybody talks about MVP. I know this, you can't be more valuable to your team than Steph Curry is to the Warriors. Does that mean he should win the award? I'm not saying that. I don't vote for those things. I leave that to others. But I know this, you can't be more valuable in not just offensive ways, but how he approaches the game, how much he cares. And so I can't see the Lakers losing tomorrow, but like Steph Curry's that good that if you're Steve Kerr and you're his teammates, you feel like you have a chance every night, no matter who you play.
Yeah. To your point, as someone who's picking the Lakers, I think on ESPN's, you know, we all made our picks. I think 16 out of 17 people picked the Lakers. Only Nick Topolo, our shoe guy, was brave enough to pick the Warriors. I think that's
hold on. What's a shoe guy?
Sneaker industry guy, covers the sneaker industry for us, among many other things. He's very good.
No, I'm not saying that. I didn't know we had a sneaker guy.
We do.
Wow.
And he picked the Warriors. He also knows the game very well. He picked the Warriors. I'm just saying the spread, I think people are sleeping on how good the Warriors have been since they leaned into sort of the old Warrior style. Like if you told me the spread was 12-4, I'd be like, all right, that makes sense. 15-1 or 61 surprised me.
But also, give me one thing. They were playing eight guys too. Like that was a big factor. When you narrow your rotation, you mentioned it with Wiseman. And again, this is not anything, this is just facts. The numbers you talked, you know, you don't have to apologize. They're facts. Like that's just facts. Like you know, you can dispute opinions. You can get your feelings hurt by opinions, but facts are facts, right? When they've gone to eight guys and they've narrowed it and they've upped Curry's minutes, upped Green's minutes, upped Wiggins, you know, Wiggins could always has been a workhorse, like durable workhorse. I mean, he can really play big minutes. Like, that makes them better. And so, like, 15-1, you know, like, or whatever it was that you said, like, it's not surprising because that's how I think the respect that James and the Lakers garner. But I would suspect that if it's close in the end, nothing is putting more fear into you right now than that Steph Curry can make three incredible shots down the stretch to pull out, you know, a tight game.
I'm going 108-103 Lakers. That's my official score. I never make score predictions. Why not? You're going to be wrong. You might as well just have fun. 108-103.
I would say it's going to be a big – I think it's going to be a cruise to victory in the fourth for the Lakers. But, again, I hate saying that because I have such respect for the Warriors and Curry. I just think the guy is.
What should I do if it's actually 108-103?
I think you should ask for a raise. I do. Like, you should go in. And I would say this. The gentleman's name, Nick DiPaolo, if he's the one guy that picks the Warriors and they win, he should go in for the raise.
Fair. Give me 2 minutes on what's your what
money to you. If you make it, hit it right, this should lead to money for you.
Okay. I can't disagree with that. Give me 2 minutes on, we have four first round series that are already set. What's the one you're most excited for?
I want to see the Clippers and the Mavs. You know, I think, I love watching, Doncic play. I think Tim Hardaway is so important to them. I'm interested in what lineups, Rick Carlisle decides. And then I really want to see the Clippers. They've had a terrific regular season. I don't know who they're going to play. I'm so interested in who they're going to rotate, how they're going to rotate in a playoff series. Is all the talk of them like caring more, invested more, better communication, if it's true? Like, I think the regular season, because they're so good and so talented, I think the Nets have by far the most talented team in the East. The Clippers have by far the most talented team in the West. Like, I want to see what it translates to, because I think they're really, I mean, if they're together and they're healthy, I think the Clippers are the real deal. And yet, you know, Luka Doncic, like, they're dangerous. They're dangerous because of him.
I love that series. I think two things. Number one, logic points you to the Clippers. Like, if you asked a robot predict who wins the West, the robot would say, well, the Jazz and the Suns, yeah, I think there's reasons to be skeptical. Not that they're paper tigers, but that maybe they're 5% worse in the playoffs than they are in the regular season, 10% worse, whatever, because of their style, experience, whatever you want. Lakers injured, recovering. Jamal Murray injured. That hurts the Nuggets. Yeah, should be Clippers. Should be Clippers, baggage and all. Maybe the robot doesn't know about the baggage. I don't know. Robots have, I don't know how emotionally intelligent robots are these days. And then the Clippers tanked the last game of the season, or the last two, actually, to avoid the Lakers. Now, maybe they did that just to avoid the Lakers, and whoever they got in the first round, that was collateral damage. If they did it thinking, we don't hate this Mavs matchup, or we like the Mavs matchup better than the Blazers, I think they're underestimating the Mavs. If the Mavs are healthy, and that's Kleba, who's had Achilles soreness, and it was their primary guy on Kawhi last year, and obviously Porzingis, and a couple other guys have been nicked up here and there. If they're healthy, I think they have a chance to win that series. I think that's going to be a competitive series. I think my pick is going to be Clippers in seven, but I think the Mavs are dangerous. Luka is incredible. We saw what he did to the Clippers last year. They have more shooting, more defensive options this year. They can put out some pretty potent lineups, and like, I wouldn't be looking at that as they may win 4-1 in five close games or something, but that is not a walkover for the Clippers. I think the Mavs have a shot in that series.
Yeah, I think the Clippers are clearly, the most talented team in the West. I think your robot would be right. I think anything besides them winning the West will surprise me. You know, I'm not saying shock me if the Lakers won, or, you know, I'm not saying shock me, but it would surprise me. Frankly, it surprised me last year too. I thought they were the best team. I think the robot would have said the same thing last year.
I picked them last year.
Yeah. So I'm interested. I think with the Doncic thing, Doncic in the pick and roll, you have to have defensive versatility where you can switch, because the drop, his size is so great, his vision is so great, and they shoot. You know, they have a bunch of shooting around him. And so, you know, who do they play? You know, how do they guard the pick and roll? And then how can he punish the inevitable switches that take place? Is it all on the step back three? Because he can get that off anytime he wants. What percentage he shoots, we'll see. Or can he still puncture their defense with some dribble penetration? I think it's an intriguing series. I think I'm so interested, you know, I mean, for Dallas to have this matchup in the five, is it seems cruel, but hey, in the West, it's no joke.
Like, you lived it, Coach. You lived it.
It's hard, and it's not changing anytime soon.
All right. Well, enjoy Los Angeles. Enjoy the game. I hope to cross paths with you soon now that I am vaccinated and maybe can travel a little bit. It's always good to catch up, even by Zoom. Jeff Van Gundy, there's nobody better. Enjoy the game and keep railing on the Eurofell.
Don't worry about that. We're in alignment. All right. Take care, Zach.
Thanks, Coach.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.